G'day, welcome to all you Baggy Green fanatics and cricket lovers around the world for the latest podcast right here at the Baggy Green blog. First of all, I must say a huge congratulations to the West Indies as they are the official winners of the 2012 ICC World T20. And as some of you know, I'm very passionate about West Indies cricket, so to see them lift the trophy, I have to admit, there weren't any sour grapes, you know, despite the fact they kicked us out of the semi-finals. It was great to see, you know, Darren, Sammy and how the team were so enthusiastic and generally happy with what they'd achieved. It's been a long time coming, I guess, West Indies cricket after all the lows they've been through. And while, you know, they didn't have necessarily a dominant tournament, it was definitely something that's going to put them in a good position for whatever it is to come for them in the not-too-distant future. So a big well done to them, and I'm sure they partied very hard. Also, an even bigger congratulations to the Southern Stars, the Australian women's cricket team, as they managed to retain their title as the winners. They won the 2010 ICC World T20 in the female competition. They've done it again in 2012. And it was an awesome final, very good for women's cricket. It was actually a very tense game with very high quality cricket. For those of you who didn't see it, I personally really enjoyed it a lot. And the fact it came down to the last ball when, you know, any team still could have won, I thought that was really good. Importantly, Jess Cameron was the player of the match, and she played a very innovative, somewhat sneaky sort of innings. And all in all, the bowlers were just absolutely brilliant. It was good to see, so well done to them. So, look, with the curtain closed on the ICC World T20 for the year 2012, I think it's time to take a look back and analyse things from an Australian supporter's perspective. I'm really stoked to introduce one of my best mates, actually. He's going to be joining me on this podcast episode. He's just as passionate a Baggy Green supporter as I am. He's decided to neglect his family needs for the night and not worry about feeding his children and cleaning their nappies out and all that. So, yeah, a big welcome to my mate, Matt McCracken. Matt, it's awesome to have you join me on this podcast, buddy.
I'm glad to join you.
Yeah, it's awesome. So, look, let's just get right to it. And look, I'm curious to know, looking back at the 2007 ICC World T20 to 2012, how do you see how it's changed as a competition?
Well, back in 2007, I think 2020 was still just finding its feet. I think it was still classed as a bit of a hit and giggle, whereas nowadays it's taken a much more, since the IPL has come to the front and other competitions like the Big Bash, I think it's taken a lot more seriously now. Whereas in 2007, T20 cricket wasn't as exposed to international, even at state level.
Yeah, like I tend to agree with you actually, because I mean, if you look at the 2007 tournament, although there was obviously a logical structure with how, you know, the ICC put together the event, you just look at the way teams have kind of progressed in terms of how sides actually structure their teams on a strategic level. There's definitely a lot more strategy in T20 cricket, and definitely the individuals have a different way in which they approach their game. I think from Australian cricket's perspective, you know, there's definitely been a lot more, you know, it's always been treated like, I guess you could say, not too seriously by the players. When all of a sudden, I'd say since that 2000 or that 2010 tournament in the West Indies, the whole attitude changed. And obviously, like you said, with these state, you know, competitions such as the Big Bash League and the IPL, teams are given far more exposure. Players at domestic level, state level are given far more exposure as well. Which means when they actually get to international level, guys have a completely different mindset now, as you know, in 2012 compared to, you know, back in 2007. So yeah, that would be, I guess that would be my views on the way it's progressed. In your mind, do you think this was a good tournament, the one in Sri Lanka?
Very much so. I think that, yeah, it was very well hosted. I think all the teams were quite well prepared. Australia squeezed in a series of T20 against Pakistan for the tournament. Yeah, I think it was very well organised.
You mentioned the Pakistan series very briefly there. How are you feeling heading into this World T20 based on what we saw over in the United Arab Emirates for those T20s against Pakistan?
I think, the T20 Pakistan series in Pakistan and the West Indies series, I think Australia was a little bit exposed to quality spinners, and I think that was always going to be a problem, being the tournaments hosted in Sri Lanka. But to be honest, I didn't feel too bad coming into it, having in the last game, having Watson and picked up the spinner from Ajmal from Pakistan, yeah, not too badly. So it gave me a little bit of confidence going towards the World Cup.
Well, I mean, obviously you mentioned the whole aspect of we were exposed a bit. Now, heading into the tournament, everyone was talking about our middle order. And look, I mean, you didn't need to be a genius to figure it out that we had a fragile middle order. And everyone knew that we were going to be very dependent on our top order getting a good start. So, look, our middle order was good on paper. Now, I wrote this on the blog in an article just before the tournament, that on paper our middle order was good, but they're very flat with their performances for Australia. And looking back on this and seeing how we were exposed against Pakistan and West Indies, particularly against spin, notably Saeed Ajmal and Sunil Narine, or Narayan, however you want to say it, would you agree on that? Our middle order is definitely a little bit of a concern?
Very much so. White, Hussey, two names that come to mind. David Hussey, that is.
Yes, yeah.
Mike Hussey had a great tournament. Whereas they guys have shown potential in a lot of games, but have never really come with consistency. I think they were hoping they would in this World Cup. I just don't think it came off. I think we were very badly exposed, especially putting David Hussey in for that last game where he hadn't played an innings all tournament. I think leaving in a young fella like Maxwell would have gave him great experience on the big stage like that. But yeah, yes, we were very exposed in the middle order when we needed some big runs.
All right, Matt, you mentioned David Hussey and Cameron White there. Now, obviously, no one wants to answer these questions and criticise any player. Or personally, I don't like to do it. But I guess from an objective point of view, if you look at Cameron White and David Hussey, they were brought back into the Australian 2020 side basically because of what they were able to achieve at state level. Cameron White in particular, during not only the IPL but also the English T20 League, he really performed brilliantly. And everyone thought, well, you know, he's a confidence player, you know. So, you know, he's getting runs now. It's great. He's getting back in the team. But clearly it hasn't worked. And I could say the same for David Hussey. And I just get the feeling that these two guys, as good as they are, I mean, you know, they're very good cricketers, but they're almost great state cricketers, because they keep getting selected based on this perceived reputation as big hitters and game changers, but we haven't really seen it for Australia. So to me, although I hate to point out guys, but those two guys in particular stand out to me as not really being a part of the solution. So I guess talking about guys who would maybe be suitable to step in for either David Hussey or Cameron White, or obviously moving a guy like Michael Hussey down the order, I think he's batting way too high, for example. Whereas we always know we've got that safety net almost with him being situated in the middle to lower order. Who are the sort of players that come to mind for you as, you know, players who would be part of the solution to strengthen our middle order and even our top order as, you know, we move forward to, I guess, the next T20?
Well, I'm a big believer in youth. I think the likes of a young Aaron Finch or Mitchell Marsh will come into the fold. I don't think you can have too many all-rounders in a team, especially in a game like T20, where bowlers can get smacked around and it's a confidence game. So you need a few that you can change players quite quickly. Yeah, Aaron Finch would be my man to go in for either David Hussey or Cameron White.
Okay.
Your thoughts?
Well, I like that. You mentioned Aaron Finch. Okay, look. A lot of guys will say, yeah, well, look at his averages. I'm very much a stats guy myself, but at the same time, you also get a gut feeling about certain players. And for me, yeah, Aaron Finch, definitely. I mean, well, the guy's played 2020 cricket for Australia. I mean, that's the first thing to point out. You know, when Aaron Finch played for Australia, what, he got 53 versus England. He's, you know, a guy who's capable. I mean, why not? And I mean, he's recently just blasted a massive century for the Victorian Bush Rangers against the Queensland Bulls while it was, you know, a 50-over game. But irrespective, that's a guy who stepped up in limited overs cricket. I would even go as far as saying, looking at Michael Hussey, to me, I've always said Callum Ferguson is a good replacement. Although he hasn't done great for Australian 2020 cricket, he's done extremely well for us in limited overs cricket. You know, he's averaging just over 40 runs in limited overs cricket. There's Mitchell Marsh as well, who's also played a bit of cricket for Australia at international level in T20 cricket. He had an awesome Big Bash League. He's had a pretty good start to his current season for the Western Warriors. I guess we spoke a little while ago about Travis Burt. What do you reckon about him? I mean, he's played a few matches for Australian 2020 cricket, but although he didn't perform that well, do you reckon that was maybe just to do with opportunity? The selectors got impatient with him. Keep in mind, he scored the most runs in the Big Bash League for the Hobart Hurricanes.
I think he needs to be given more opportunity. I'm a big fan of Travis Burt.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
I see him coming in for a replacement as like Mike Hussey. Mike Hussey's not getting any younger, even though no one wants to see him go because he's the glue that holds the Australian team together at the moment. Yeah. I see him coming in and doing a nice job, which what Mike Hussey would normally do. So yeah, I'm a big fan of Travis Burt.
Okay, well, it looks like we're on the same page then. I mean, here we're mentioning guys who, you know, Travis Burt, I mean, yeah, he's 30 years old now?
Yeah, 30.
So, I mean, yeah, we're talking about guys who, you know, in the mid-20s to, you know, early 30s, with the exception there, of course, of Mitch Marsh. But another guy who seems to have been forgotten to me is Philip Hughes, funny enough. You know, we've all kind of pigeonholed him as a test cricketer. And, I mean, now he's done the move, obviously, to the Redbacks, which I'm really happy about. But obviously that's going to be good for his career. However, if you look at the guy, I mean, he's a pretty damn good limited overs cricketer. In List A cricket, he's averaging close to 50. And in 2020 cricket, he's averaging over 50. I mean, why the hell isn't a guy like that being given a chance? Why are we constantly pushing him for test cricket when as soon as he does badly, obviously we start looking at all the weaknesses of his game. But hell, I mean, there's a guy who's got the stats right there. There's a guy who's performing. Why are we picking a guy like that? I mean, recently in the English T20 League, what, I've got the stats here. He scored 402 runs in 8 innings and an average of 100. What about Hughes?
I definitely have to agree with you, Emma. Hughes is a great little player. He got exposed a little bit in Test cricket. He's gone away and he's worked on his technique quite a lot. And I think 2020, a format like that, your technique gets less exposed. So I think, yeah, he'd be a great inclusion in the side.
So, I mean, right there, I think we found some definite solutions to address this middle order issue, because you look at Australia's top order, Shane Watson, David Warner. On the point of Shane Watson, what an awesome tournament he had. I mean, 4 Man of the Match awards. What was 4, hey? 4 in a row?
Yeah, 4 in a row, yeah.
I mean, 249 runs at just under an average of 50. 350s, and yeah, a lot of people say, yeah, but you know, he didn't step up in the big games. But geez, in 2007, funny enough, the World T20 event 2007 against Sri Lanka was when Shane Watson walked off the field with an injury, and we all thought, well, that's it. That's the end of Shane Watson. And here he is. He's come back rejuvenated. He took 11 wickets for the tournament and walked away. Well, player of the tournament.
Yeah.
I mean, no, that's just awesome.
Had an absolutely fantastic tournament. Possibly to the detriment of Australia's middle order. They didn't get much time in the middle before the big game, which could have possibly hurt us. But no, absolutely, you can't fault him, Matt. Absolutely brilliant tournament.
David Warner, I mean, you mentioned to me before we started this episode that, you know, he is a little bit inconsistent.
I call Watson a 60% player. I'd call Warner a 30 or 40% player. They come off 30 or 40% of the time. I'd like to see Warner get that up a little bit higher because he is so dangerous on his day. I'd like to see it a little bit more consistently.
So there we go. We've looked at our top order, which is pretty damn awesome. Our middle order is a bit fragile at the moment, but talking about those guys as possible solutions, and
definitely got the depth.
We got the depth, and let's see how this season goes. But there's a guy we haven't spoken of here, and that's George Bailey. Now, I remember very clearly when you and I had a chat heading into the tournament, you had very high hopes for George Bailey, and looking at the way he played in that semi-final match, when sort of all hope was lost, he came out playing with what to me was just pure aggression. And Jared Kimber, actually, another cricket writer, or former blogger, now I guess he'd want to be called a cricket writer, he actually said, you know, that he used the word aggression when describing the innings of George Bailey. And I guess a lot of people were surprised by that. But, you know, I don't think it was too much of a surprise. I guess you weren't that surprised, right?
No, absolutely not, Ian. There was a lot of talk on Australia's picking 10 players and one captain. I felt George Bailey was a definite inclusion. On the batsman side, I didn't think he was picked as a captain-only player. I think he has great skill. He showed that in the semi-final. He came out and played with pure aggression, as you said, and it was great to see. I was a little bit worried about his captaincy before that knock, because I thought a lot of question marks would have been held over his head about his captaining decisions in fielding in that game. But I'm really glad that he came out and did have that really great knock. It's shown a lot of people what he's capable of.
I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you at all there. I think for him personally, it was a very important innings. Captaincy aside, it was good for people to see how George Bailey can really smack the leather off a cricket ball. That was awesome to see. And at the same time, you could say that innings has kept him in the side. All right. Although, you know, you said you feel very strongly that irrespective of captaincy and all that, he is a guy who deserves to be in this team. He's capable of holding his position.
Very much.
You did mention about the tactics, though. Now, there were a few things, like, I guess we can talk about. I'm sure some of you guys listening would be keen to hear us chat about it. First thing, Xavier Doherty's use. All right. Brilliant move against South Africa in particular. I thought that was just a perfect move. By the Australian selectors. But when we came into playing West Indies, your feeling on that?
I felt we should... I know he did bowl well against Pakistan, but I felt we shouldn't have used him even against Pakistan. I thought it was a great move to bring in, to get a guy out like Richard Levy for the South African side, because everyone knew he was struggling against spin. But yeah, I don't think he should have been used against Pakistan, and I honestly don't think he should have been used against the West Indies. He is a great cricketer. He knows the game very well. He just got very exposed, and I think he got chosen to bowl at the wrong times.
Another tactic I'd like to talk about, just very briefly, is the whole thing of David Hussey coming in the semi-final, Glenn Maxwell going out, and Cameron White being retained. You know, I mean, you touched very, very briefly on that sort of exclusion of Maxwell, and yeah, he didn't have an exceptionally good tournament, but I was really impressed with his performance against Pakistan in the UAE, the way he came out as a guy who really had no fear, and it's not like he had any baggage or hang-ups. And I think we needed that sort of a player who was, you know, a little bit cocky and a bit arrogant. And we brought in a guy who hadn't really been playing much cricket, and a guy who, as soon as he puts on an Australian jersey, he seems to kind of get a bit nervous and becomes a really shaky starter. And of course, you know, I'm referring to Cameron White there. Your view on that little tactical blunder?
I think George Bailey and Mickey Arthur got a bit of a scare with him dropping that catch against the Pakistanis and him having a pretty ordinary game. I think it was a nervous thing on their part, and they wanted to go with the experience of David Hussey. What experience there is with David Hussey. And yes, I think it was a mistake. I think Maxwell would have really benefited from playing in that semi-final.
Yeah, look, I mean, in hindsight, you know, it's all good saying, yeah, Maxwell should have played, and David, you know, because if David Hussey could have had a great night out there, so could Cameron White, but the thing is they haven't. And if you look back at some of the stats of those guys, their last few performances, I mean, Cameron White's most recent series averages for Australian 2020 cricket, but in Sri Lanka in 2011, he left with an average of 23 against Pakistan, the UAE, 6.66. David Hussey, average of 4 against Sri Lanka, 2 against Pakistan, the UAE. I mean, that's not insulting the players for their, you know, the credibility they have at state level, but it did seem to me that was a big mistake, whereas Glenn Maxwell showed, you know, quite a bit of what he's capable of. That was kind of my view on that one. I thought that was a little bit of a slip-up in terms of selection.
Very much so.
The bowling. Our bowlers were exceptionally good. However, I know you're quite a big fan of Dan Christian. Maybe talk a little bit about your point of view of how he was maybe underused this tournament.
I think he's a great death bowling option. I think he has great capabilities in that area, and I think that's where Australia lacks a little bit. In this tournament, Mitch Stark did a great job in that area, but I think he'd be well backed up by Dan Christian. I know Watto loves to bowl there as well, but you've got to give some leeway. Someone's got to give at that point. And I think Dan Christian's the man to do it. He has been taken for a few in a couple, but who hasn't in 2020 cricket? Yeah, I think he's a great death bowling option, and he should have definitely been in there ahead of Xavier Doherty. That was a huge tactical area, in my opinion.
All right, here's a quick one for you. Glenn Maxwell or Dan Christian?
Oh, wow. I like
you want to get back to that one?
They're both great X factors, I believe. Maxwell probably has the more potential at this stage.
Yeah.
I'd prefer to see Dan Christian up the order, actually. So yeah. Oh no, that's a flip of the coin for me, to be honest.
Okay, but I mean, also, I'd just like to say about Dan Christian, I thought he would have been good against the West Indies as well, given he was a big part of our squad over in the Caribbean.
Very much so.
So, yeah. I don't know, I just thought it would have been good playing him there. But look, we've gone on about the negatives a little too long. Let's talk about some of the positives. We made the semi-finals. We were ranked, you know, there was a lot of criticism thrown at the side because of the ranking. Eventually, you know, the guys were like, you know, sod off. We're a lot better than this. We're going to really go at this one. We're going to try prove you all wrong. And as a supporter, I was extremely proud to see the guys get to the semi-final. Yeah, I was really disappointed to see how we got knocked out, but we made the semi-final. Major positive.
Very much so. As an Australian supporter, you like to you like to see your country go a little bit further. But no, that's coming in as a week before the tournament, ranked number 10 in the world. You'd take that any day of the week.
We've spoken about some of the solutions. We said, you know, the middle order just needs to be tweaked a little bit. We need to be bringing in guys who are capable at not only playing 2020 cricket, you know, for a longer period of time, but also guys who have the potential to merge into our limited overs team in 50 over cricket. The fast bowler rotation will be very good. We had Clint Mackay and Ben Hilfenhaus, who very, you know, they're also brilliant bowlers who weren't really given a game. So I think rotation would be very good, hopefully come the summer, which I know has already been spoken about for our test side. But in 2020, I think it'll be very good as well, while rather retaining a more consistent batting lineup, given we've got greater depth with our bowling stocks. And also moving away from selecting guys on this reputation, rather selecting guys on what they're capable of doing for Australian cricket, what is their current form like, and what are their attitudes like. That's surely going to be a better way forward. And also the quality spinner. And I remember before our semi-final game against the West Indies, you made a very good point to me, in that you reckoned that Sri Lanka and West Indies would probably be the team in the final. Obviously not, you know, going against our guys by any means, but saying because they had a quality spinner, and that was going to be a big thing of what set the teams apart this tournament. So you still think we're searching for that quality spinner?
Yeah, we probably are still searching for that quality spinner. We did bring Brad Hogg back in for this tournament at the age of 41. I think he did extremely well. It was quite hard to pick.
Probably a lot fitter than a lot of the Indian cricketers.
Yeah, very much so. It was great to see in the field. He had a couple of good dives. I think it was very hard to pick, and I don't know why he was not bowled out in the West Indies game. I think that was a mistake again, a tactical error by the captain. But yeah, I believe he had quite a good tournament. I think he did quite well for himself. Looking for a spinner in the future, I think he's probably had his time now. Even though he still looks great in the field,
probably looks better than most of the players. Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. Oh yeah, I think we need to find that finger spinner that can turn the ball both ways.
Yeah, and look, like we said, Shane Watson, player of the tournament, Michael Hussey showing no signs of age and just once again finding a way to turn an impossible situation into something possible. Mitchell Stark, we actually haven't mentioned him, how awesome he was with the new ball. Easily my pick out of all the teams. Without sounding biased, he was definitely the best new ball bowler in my opinion. And also Patrick Cummins, it was good to see him given quite a few opportunities, and also bowling in situations where he was given a little bit of a hiding, but it would have been a good learning curve for him. So plenty of positives to take away, but let's talk about our ideal Australian 2020 team. Let's maybe talk about that, and all of you guys listening can maybe agree to disagree or whatever, but let's talk about it. Let's go with our opening duo, our top two. Who would you go with?
Still got to have Warner and Watson at the top. They're the two best openers in the world at the moment. On a good day, you'd call Australia versus West Indies a good matchup every time with your opening partners. Who would you go for?
Oh, Watson and Warner as well. You mentioned maybe a guy like Travis Burt at number three.
I think bringing him, he's getting into that age where he's getting into his early 30s. I think it's a great opportunity for him. I've seen him play state cricket for a long time now. Yeah, I think he'd suit into that Australian mould very easily.
Okay, well, for me, I'd actually also be looking at Philip Hughes in that top order, having him maybe at three or four as well.
Yeah, possibly. You're a much bigger fan of Philip Hughes than I am, but yeah, possibly could squeeze him in there.
Yeah, I mean, Aaron Finch, we've already said, to me, I would be putting him in the side. I don't care about stats, as I've said, in this guy's case. I'd be getting him in that team and having Michael Hussey situated around him. I think they'd be able to complement each other quite well.
Very much so, yes. I agree with that.
Then maybe, yeah, say, we spoke about George Bailey. I'd be keeping him in the side. He would have gained a lot of experience leading the team in a ICC tournament. And maybe going from a guy like Bailey down to Matthew Wade.
Yep, and then I'd be finishing off with a guy like Dan Christian.
Yeah, and I mean...
Then into your bowlers.
And yeah, I mean, well, look, we made a good point. I mean, Matthew Wade didn't have the best of tournaments. He's going very well for the Victorian Bushrangers in their current Sheffield game, which is really good to see. But I just think that he's got a lot of work to do in his facing spin bowlers. But you and I both mentioned very briefly a few nights ago that Justin Langer had been quite vocal. What about doing some work with him?
Yeah, they after the West Indies series, he took him aside and they worked very long and hard on his techniques facing spin. He did get very exposed in the West Indies against Nareen, and I think he showed a little bit of promise in Pakistan. I still think he has a lot of work to do, but yeah. I think he's the right man for the job. I wouldn't be changing him for anyone else.
And I guess it was pretty funny seeing Darren Sammy's tactic. As soon as Matthew Wade came out, Sunil Narayan given the new ball, and well, Matthew Wade went out trying to attempt a sweep shot. So it was almost his get out of jail card. But I still think that he's a guy who's, along with Tim Payne, we're in very safe hands, literally. But let's talk about the bowling then. For me, Mitchell Stark, Patrick Cummins, Ben Hilfenhaus, Clint Bakai. I still think Xavier Doty is a guy who can deliver the goods. Stephen O'Keefe is maybe a guy to not keep down and out for too long.
Yeah, I think Stephen has a big future in front of him. Yeah, I'd keep him definitely in mind for the Australian team.
And I mean, we also mentioned, Mitchell Marsh as well. So we're going from good batsmen to plenty of bowlers to a few all-rounders of choice. Dan Christian, Mitch Marsh, Glenn Maxwell. Obviously we've got the awesomeness of Shane Watson. So to me, we've gone well over 11 players here, but it shows that there's definitely options here. And we haven't even probably gotten into the. I think we've only just touched base on this.
Well, as you look at the West Indies side, half of their team, well, 9 out of the 11 players, you probably class as all-rounders. And that's what I think Australia's going for there with the likes of Mitchell Marsh and Dan Christian and those young guys. I think that's the way of 2020 cricket. Because you might not always have the best day, but if you're not having a great day, you can pass the ball on to someone else.
A lot of guys are saying, this is a form of the game where one guy can turn it around. And that was clearly evident this tournament. In the final for the West Indies, it was Marlon Samuels who just absolutely caned Slinger Malinga all around the park. And that one innings of Marlon Samuels pretty much won the game for the West Indies. They bowled exceptionally well, but it can take one guy. So you've got an all-rounder in your team, a guy who can deliver for you with both the bat and the ball. Well, it seems to be definitely the game for the all-rounder.
Very much so. Absolutely. I've never seen Malinga taken apart like that before.
It was pretty brutal, but... look, a very successful tournament, and it's been really cool actually being able to chat with you about this, and I hope all you guys listening to this have... not gone too bored and hopefully seen some value in what we're saying. But looking ahead for Australian cricket, we've got the state season currently underway. We've got the Champions League about to go on, where the Perth Scorchers will be there along with the Sydney Sixers. A couple of Aussie players in some of the Indian IPL sides. I also saw Glenn Maxwell last night playing for Hampshire.
He top scored again for them tonight. Yeah, he scored 42.
Okay, so ahead of me.
He's travelling home. He was mentioning on Twitter that he's travelling home tomorrow. He had enjoyed his time in South Africa.
Obviously, we're referring to the qualifiers. Some teams we've mentioned aren't actually going to be playing the official Champions League, but it was still good to see a couple of the Aussie guys getting out there. So along with the Champions League and obviously the Australian state season, which I'm keeping a very close eye on, especially seeing how some of our state players are, or what am I saying, our international players are going, like Ricky Ponting, Michael Clarke. Let's talk, not for too long, but we've got the Test Series against Africa coming up. Leading into that, it's actually going to be a very intense summer. I guess we've got a lot of cricket to look forward to, huh?
Yeah, now it's an exciting summer of cricket coming up. Looking very much forward to it.
I'm looking forward to seeing the Baggy Greens get out there. All you guys who are proud, staunch supporters, get your gear on. Wherever you are in the world, if you've got to wake up crack of dawn to watch the game or suffer a bit of sleep deprivation or whether you're actually going to some of the games, make sure you enjoy it. Cheer loudly and proudly for the boys. And yeah, Matt, thanks for joining. It was awesome chatting with you, mate. And if any of you guys want to chat with Matt, he's also on Twitter. So the Bay Union blog. Thanks for listening to this latest podcast. Chat to all you guys soon. Thanks for listening. Matt, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it.